summer of 1913, the railroad had come through 3 miles north of us, and a small community known as Moquin had moved 3 miles from the northeast to the place due north of us and established a post office there known as Moquin also. The old place was called Old Moquin. There had been a school run for a few years at Old Moquin and was held in a sod schoolhouse. Sod building was the standard building for claim houses and most things in that area up until that time. However, we were not living in a sod house. Anyway, as the sod schoolhouse could not be moved there, and an old one-room claim shack built of wood was available near the post office of Moquin, and they decided to hold a school in it while a new schoolhouse was being built. This was known as Moquin District 101, and my folks decided, being that we were in that district that had been organized for that purpose, decided I should go there to school the next winter. So I enrolled there. The teacher was an old gentleman by the name of White, Alfred Keith White, who had a long white beard, and he was 77 years old. He also had long hair down to his shoulders in the manner of the Western people, some of the Western men at that time, like Buffalo Bill and Pawnee Bill, and a few of the other old Western people. As my mother had continued to teach me after the 3 months at Sage, I had advanced far enough where Mr. White decided that after questioning me and listening to me read some, decided I was ready for the second grade. Actually, he later on had me take some third grade subjects, such as geography and arithmetic, as in both arithmetic and study of geography, I was very interested and already quite well versed for a second grade student. After finishing this four or five-month term, I was certified by the old teacher White to be ready for the third grade. During the winter of 1913 and 14, the state legislature had passed a law that all land that was not proved up on as claims was claimed by the state and designated as school land. All income from it would be used for schools in the state of Oklahoma. During the summer of 1914, they held an auction and auctioned off this, a lot of this school land. And my father bid and acquired 1,000 acres at cents an acre. I think it was 55 and a quarter cents an acre that he paid for this 1,000 acres. And as our 5 years, or the 5 years of the claim that we had bought into, was about up, he started to improving this piece, this 1,000 acres, building fence and whatnot on it. And he'd go to that every morning, and I would ride to school at Mulcaine, which was started in the new schoolhouse at that time. And we then early in 1915, my father moved our barn off of the claim to the new land, and in around the 1st of May that night, spring of 1915, we moved onto that land, moving into the old barn until we could get the house moved. And we lived there for about a month or a month and a half until I got the house moved and fixed up where we could move into it. This land was a mile and a quarter east of this little town of Mulcaine. During this, the past term of school, there were a number of large boys, 15, 16, 17 years old, going there, and the teacher, not being a good disciplinarian, the school was not too effective, except for those which wanted to learn, which I apparently was one that did. The next year, that was the fall of 1915-16, the teacher that came in thought she could handle these boys and provide discipline. However, after about 4 months, she gave it up and said that there was no way, and she wasn't going to continue to teach and waste the taxpayers' money on trying to get along with fellows like that. Teachers being very scarce in the middle of a year that way, they finally found a fellow by the name of Wilcox who had apparently bought his certificate from the county superintendent, because he could not or had not anyway passed an examination to be effective as a school teacher. What really happened, he settled these boys down. He was a strict disciplinarian, and he really made believers out of these bigger boys. And one grade above always taught the other grade below. And some way we learned and got along. He was hired for the next year, and he was somewhat of a reprobate, but he did do things. The war in Europe was progressing at that time, not very favorable to the Allies, and one of the main things I remember is the big gun the Germans built to shell Paris from 65 miles away. This teacher, Wilcox, took a daily paper out of Oklahoma City. He would get it one day late. I always sit and read it at his desk every morning while one of the other classes above would hear recitations of the great below him, below them, he would read his paper. And one of the headlines I remember on this paper that he held it up reading it one morning was, "There ain't no such a gun that will shoot 65 miles, and if there is, it is a ton of a gun." Well, as it turned out, they did have this gun, and on a Good Friday morning in 1916, they shelled Paris, one shell landing in the courtyard of a large Catholic church in Paris, killing 11 people, I believe it was. The highlight of the summer of 1916 was a Ringling Brothers Circus came to Woodward, Oklahoma, which was 100 miles away from us to the southeast, and the railroad that came up through there ended at a little town of Morgan, 11 miles east of it, west of us, ran a excursion train with reduced fares for families, and my folks decided that it was time that we should go, that my brother was about 5 years old at the time, and I was getting up where I would really enjoy a circus. My father, being a somewhat of a kid about circuses himself, he said we would go. The train would come through Mulcaine at about 6 o'clock in the morning on this excursion. We were all ready. They had brought 4 extra coaches up to take care of the crowd, they thought. Three of the coaches were already jam-packed with people from Beaver City and Oregon and territory around there. People from around Mulcaine jammed another coach, and by the time we got to Gate, which was the most eastern place in Beaver County, having passed through Knowles and got to Gate, all of the coaches were practically jam-packed with people standing in the aisles. Got to the next little town, which was Laverne, and there they put on just plain boxcars, and people jammed them. By the time we got to May, which was next to the last stop before we got into Woodward, the boxcars were jam-packed on the top and hanging on the sides, and so they put on some more boxcars, and most of that was all filled up by the time they got to Woodward after passing through May and Fort Supply. We made the afternoon session of the circus. However, there were so many people they could not take care of all of them, so some of the people on the train had to make the night session of the circus. And it was about 10 o'clock at night before the train got to pull out of Woodward, heading back towards our end of the country. They had brought plenty of coaches that time, but they hadn't figured on such a load, and they had engine trouble pulling it. They had to finally stop a freight train and get one of the engines off of it to continue on with the two engines pulling this train that the railroad apologized most profusely about, not realizing that people was wanting to go to the circus so bad. Woodrow Wilson was running for president of the United States that year of 1916. That was the first time I remember anything about a presidential campaign. Mr. Wilson ran, he was already president, having been elected in 1912. I remember that his main plank of his platform, or the main thing that he ran on, was that he had kept us out of the war. He was the first and only Democrat that my father ever voted for president. Another highlight of my life in summer of 1916 was my mother's and brother and my visit to our mother's mother in Wisconsin, along with a couple of her brothers and two of her sisters. We traveled by train from Meade, Kansas, on the Golden State Limited, going towards Chicago. We spent one night on the train, one night in Chicago, and arrived at Camp Douglas, Wisconsin, the next day after spending the night in Chicago. And there, our Uncle George, who was an old bachelor and my mother's youngest brother, met us at the station and Camp Douglas and took us out to the farm, which was about halfway between Camp Douglas and New Lisbon, Wisconsin. We spent a matter of something over a week in there with my mother's mother, her two sisters, and two brothers that were still living in that neighborhood. On my grandmother's Skinner's place was a wild strawberry ridge, known as Strawberry Ridge, and she was noted for the strawberry shortcakes she baked. One day my brother and I, along with a couple cousins, went out on Strawberry Ridge and picked a great amount of strawberries and brought them home to my grandmother, brought them in to her, and she told us he was to make us a big strawberry shortcake that day. Just before noon, I saw a great big woman that would weigh at least 250 pounds waddling up to the house. I told my grandmother, and she says, "Oh, that's Mrs. Snyder." Says, "She always makes it in just about the time that lunch is ready to when I've made strawberry shortcake. She saw you picking a strawberry this morning, and so she knew strawberry shortcake was on the menu for today's dinner." My mother says she will come in and she'll say, "Oh, Mrs. Skinner, I got lost in the bush, and I walked and I walked, and I finally saw your house, and I knew where I was. I would like a drink of water." My grandmother told me that when she comes to the door, you open the door. So I opened the door when she knocked, and she says, "Is your grandmother at home?" I said, "Yes, ma'am. Come in." And my grandmother come a-walking up about that time, and the old lady did. She says, "Oh, Mrs. Skinner, I was walking in the woods, and I got lost, and I walked, and I walked, and finally I saw your place, and I was so glad because I was getting thirsty, and could I have a drink of water, please?" Grandmother Skinner says, "Oh, Mrs. Snyder, sure, come on in. It's about lunchtime. Won't you stay for dinner with us?" And Mrs. Snyder says, "Oh, well, I guess so. It is just so hot to get out and walk home. I will have dinner with you." And so we had dinner, and at the end, Grandmother Skinner brought out the strawberry shortcake, cut Mrs. Snyder off a huge hunk of it, and I didn't see how anybody could eat that big a piece of strawberry shortcake, but Mrs. Snyder did. And after she got it all down, Grandmother Skinner says, "Mrs. Snyder, would you have another piece of strawberry shortcake?" And Mrs. Snyder says, "Oh, I don't know. I just don't know what I could do with it." And she fumbled around with her belt. Finally, she says, "Miss Skinner, I could have another small piece of your strawberry shortcake. I think I could get away with it." And so Grandmother Skinner brought her another good large piece of strawberry shortcake. Mrs. Snyder down that one. I couldn't imagine anybody eating that much strawberry shortcake and not getting a stomach ache, but apparently she did, because after she sat around a while after dinner, and she says, "Mrs. Skinner, I know you do not have any bitter, so I guess I should go home and put down a bottle or two of beer on my strawberry shortcake." The same thing happened another day. Actually, it was the day before we left Wisconsin. The same thing happened the same way. My brother and two cousins and I out picking strawberries, and for Grandmother Skinner to make strawberry shortcake for dinner. And Mrs. Snyder showed up again, all through the same thing. She was walking and walking in the bush and got lost, and she walked and she walked until she saw Grandmother Skinner's house. Another great sport we had, these same cousins, was picking blueberries. Blueberries grew wild very profusely in the area, and we picked lots of blueberries and had them with our cereal in the mornings for breakfast, or baked in Wisconsin flapjacks, as my grandmother called them. My mother decided we would leave Wisconsin for Minnesota to my grandparents' Givens on coming up on Friday. Grandmother Skinner says, "Oh, do not start any place on Friday. It is not good traveling time to start any place on Friday. You will regret it." My mother says, "Oh, that's just an old superstition, and I don't believe in superstitions. I think any day is as good a day as Friday is as good a day as any day to start any place on. We want to be there for Sunday." So we got on the train in New Lisbon, Wisconsin, on Friday morning and started out. Got about 50 miles to a little town called Tunnelville, where the tunnel through the low ridge of hills or small mountains called the Wisconsin Dells, and train stopped at this little town of Tunnelville. There wasn't anything there except we could see except the cheese factory and a grocery store. The train sat there and sat there. Finally, a conductor came through and announced that there was a freight train broken down in the tunnel ahead of us, and that was the only place on the whole track that wasn't double tracked. And well, we'd have to wait till they got the tire fixed on the engine of the freight train before we could proceed. proceed on. It was exceedingly hot weather, and right about noon, we had a lunch with us that Grandmother Skinner had packed for us, and she said we would really need something to eat starting out on Friday. It would be terrible if we got one place and we couldn't get anything to eat. So on the train was another old lady who spoke fairly broken English with a highly German accent that wasn't having anything to eat. My mother asked her where she was going, and she was going to Brownsville, Minnesota. And Mother says, that's where we're going. And she asked her if she knew the Givenses. Oh, yes, I know the Givenses. They live right close to us. And Mother says, well, would you like to share our lunch that we have? She says, well, yes. My son, I've been visiting in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and he put me on the train, and I didn't know this was going to happen, and he forgot to give me any money. He only gave me my tickets. So she ate lunch with us, and we shared her lunch with her, and she says, he must entertain you while you're there for this. Finally, about 6 o'clock, there was another train went through the same place, another different railroad. We went over to that depot just as we could see the train just coming. When the conductor off of the train we were on came running over and says, come on, we're going. So we went over and got on and proceeded on. We arrived in the town of Brownsville or Browndale, I don't remember which now, the name of it, and arrived there at midnight. And the husband of the old German lady was there, and my mother asked him, says, what did you think then? You did not get your bite off of the train. He says, oh, he says, I was literally flabbergasted, and I didn't know what had happened. However, they had said, and they had on the bulletin board there at the depot that the train was going to be 6.5 hours late because of a wreck in a tunnel. Not that train wreck. They made that special note that it wasn't the train, that the passenger train that was wrecked in the tunnel. A day or two after we had been at the grandparents Givens place, their phone rang one day, and there was this old German lady wanting us to come over and have dinner with them that day. So she says, my son, he will come and get you in the automobile. The boy came, a boy I would judge at that time was probably 19 years old, came driving up in a car, and we went over to that place, and we had a very wonderful dinner. A lot of it that I couldn't eat, like sauerkraut and a few things like that of German vintage that didn't agree with my eating. But I managed to get through dinner okay. And then the boy drove us around over the countryside and seeing some things. He said, we'll have to be home before dark, because he says, this car, it doesn't have electric lights on it. We've got carbide lights, and I have to light them with a match. they do that out here on the road in the wind. So he took us back to the grandparent Givens' house and got us out just where he just had time to get back to their place, which was about 4 miles away, before sundown, and he would have to have lights on his car. A couple of girl cousins came to visit the grandparents Givens while we were there. They were about George's and my age, and we had quite a time getting acquainted and playing with them at the there, and making short trips around over the country with our Aunt Ethel, who was still at home at the time. From there, we went to down into Iowa, Iowa Falls, Iowa, and where my mother in the area had a sister. My father had two brothers, or three brothers, actually, a living, and we visited them for a week. The highlight of the visiting there was at our Uncle Will's house. He ran a garage and sold Hudson Super Sixes and Maxwell automobiles at the garage.